No, you could look in the back page and get the email address without buying it. Okay, the email address is L-E-V-I-N-E, two L's, at Stevens, S-T-E-V-E-N-S dot E-D-U. I'm pleased to be here again. This is actually the third time that I have spoken here, and I take it as a positive sign that I've been invited back three times, because you usually don't invite back people whom you don't want to hear. So I take that as encouragement. Now, probably some of the things I'm going to say, some of you at least will find controversial. My goal is not to bash the yeshivas. One more time. My goal is not to bash the yeshivas. Indeed, my goal is not to bash anyone. And I certainly do not have all of the answers. The topic is, why can't Yankel read, write, and do arithmetic? And the first thing you might ask is, why isn't the topic, why can't Yankel and Yehudas read, write, and do arithmetic? And the reason is because I believe, although I don't have any hard statistics, that there's a huge difference between what goes on in the boys' yeshivas and what goes on in the girls' Beis Yaakovs. Indeed, if anything, the girls are hyper about the secular subjects. If a girl doesn't get a 99, she goes crazy. 92 is no good. The girls are very highly motivated. But the boys, it's a different story. Now, is there really a problem? Somebody wrote to me when I sent out Ab about my talk. He wrote, when Jack became Yankel, that's when the problem started. And indeed, there is truth to that. I have no hard statistics, but I have a lot of anecdotal evidence, and whoever I talk to, parents, principals, they agree that there is a real problem. Let me read to you, I'm going to read a few things to you, because it's important to hear certain things, from an article that appeared in the Five Towns Jewish Times on December 13th. Now, the Five Towns is an area in which the overwhelming majority of parents are secularly educated. They are interested in professional pursuits. Here's an article called Knowledge is Good by Avi Mayer. There is apparently a new hashkofa that our yeshiva children have come home with, and it is most unnerving. It is easily detected. It is that indifferent, blasé approach to the acquisition of secular knowledge and cultural information, an attitude that was foreign to our generation. Yes, Tati, but why is it important for me to know that? One is tempted to blurt out, listen, son, I went to yeshiva too, and it is okay to know things. Gedolim knew things. It is also correct and okay to be inquisitive. In fact, it is the right thing to do. How did it happen? How did our bright little boy turn into this anti-knowledge, non-inquisitive young man who sits before us? And even more, how did it seemingly happen to an entire generation of kids? But the rejection has gone too far. It has changed who our children have become, and it has the potential to seriously affect the future of Klal Yisrael. The dulling of curiosity is not good. If we are not curious about other things, perhaps this can affect Torah learning too. This is not a good situation. Indeed, it is a situation that must be rectified. Those are pretty strong words from a gentleman who's writing in the Five Towns paper. Now, let me quote to you something from the TED Reader's Right. Again, I'm not endorsing any of these publications. Okay? This is from October 19, 2007. I actually don't subscribe to the Arted. I get an email version of it. And the most interesting part of the Arted, in my opinion, is the Reader's Right section. Because it is one of the few forums that we have in which people can express dissatisfaction or satisfaction what's going on in the Orthodox world. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, there are problems in the Orthodox world. There really are. But if you say certain things publicly, you could kill a shidduch for your children. You could have your kids thrown out of yeshiva. Who knows what the repercussions are? After some of my articles appear, I have a friend every once in a while, he writes me an email, have they attempted to burn your house down yet? I said to him, no. Not yet. Not yet. What's interesting about the Reader's Right is that at least 80% of the letters are signed anonymous. People are willing to express opinions, but they don't want anybody to know who they are. It says something also about our environment. Now, I am not in favor of bashing or criticism simply to criticize. That's one of the reasons why I don't have a blog and I don't read blogs in general. Because blogs, people are anonymous and they can say anything. They can spew out any sort of negative stuff. I'm interested in constructive criticism where it is warranted. Teaching our kids the basics. So this appeared on October 19th, 2007. Dear editor, I just hung up the phone and I am appalled. I made a phone call to speak to someone and the person's son answered. This teenage boy's voice was hardly audible as I requested to speak to his father. I was finally able to make out that his father was not available. I asked the boy when he thinks would be a better time to call. His answer, I don't know. I asked him if he would recommend that I call back in the afternoon or evening. His answer, I don't know. I had to ask him to repeat his response twice because I could hardly make out what he was saying. Finally, after practically begging him to tell me when I can reach his father, he suggested in a muffled and unclear voice that I call back in the evening. What is the point of this letter? Well, it's twofold. Firstly, it is obvious that some people need to teach their children basic phone etiquette. To think that a teenage boy can't answer the phone properly is absolutely mind-boggling. I can't imagine what would have happened if I would have had to ask the boy to take down a message or tell his father I had called. He probably would have been completely flustered. Secondly, it is obvious that some people need to teach their children how to speak clearly. Some teenage boys have a tendency to speak quickly and incoherently. And oftentimes, it is because their parents never paid any attention to it and never sought to teach their children how to speak clearly, articulately, and intelligently. In some cases, children talk that way simply because their parents have the same problem. It is a shame that some of the most basic skills are often ignored and not taught. In the long run, it is the children themselves who end up suffering. Now, I have tutored over the years, many years. I haven't done much recently, but I've tutored math. And most of the students who come to me are from the so-called black hat yeshivas. And I've discovered that, unfortunately, there's a not insignificant number of them that simply do not have fundamental basic skills. They can't read. Fractions are a nightmare. Percents are unheard of. Some of them say, well, what do you expect from me? I went to Hasidic Cheder. How can I know anything? They didn't teach us anything. A high school math teacher recently told me, the problem is in the middle schools. The kids graduate, quote unquote, from the eighth grade without having the skills to function on a high school level. How can they? There's a terrible attitude towards secular subjects. A mashgiach in a base medrash here in Flatbush said to me, Yitzchak, you have no idea how bad the attitude toward English studies is in the elementary grades. Boys used to come in, and some of them would come in and say, I don't want to be here. But my mother made me come. My father made me come. What do I need it for? So I'm ready. I pull out the Vilna Gaon Sefer Ayil Mishulash. That is a sefer written by the Vilna Gaon on geometry, trigonometry, analytic geometry, solid geometry. There's parallel lines, there's side angle side, it's all there. Kid looks at it, doesn't quite know what to say. open up the Gemara in Sukkah and show him the Tosfos, where it talks about various mathematical things. Kid looks at it, doesn't quite know what to say. The next week, they invariably come back with one of the following two responses. The Vilna Gaon wrote that sefer in the bathroom. So I said to the kid, do you think the Gaon sat in a tile chamber like you sit in? Have you ever been in an outhouse? Do you know what it is to be in an outhouse? Or they say he wrote it before he was bar mitzvah, so it wasn't Bittul Torah. For the record, according to a friend of mine who is an expert in the writings of the Vilna Gaon, the only sefer of the Gaon that was published during his lifetime was Eil Meshulash. He didn't write it in the bathroom, and he didn't write it before his bar mitzvah, but he wrote it. He wrote it. Recently, a woman called me a few months ago that her son is in the 10th grade, and he wants to take the Math A Regents. But he's having terrible problems. Terrible problems. I asked what's going on. She explains to me that he went to a Hasidic yeshiva, and the secular, I'm not bashing the Hasidic yeshivas, this is just where the stories take place. And the English subjects, the secular subjects, were so abominable that after the 6th grade she pulled him out and sent him to learn Mishnayos in the afternoon because she didn't want him to learn to disobey and become a discipline problem in the afternoon. Can I do anything for him? I said, look, I don't know. I have to meet him. I have to see what he needs. He comes. He comes. So I start to talk with him. I ask him, how much is a third plus a half? He tells me 2/5. He adds the two numerators and he adds the two denominators. When I told my 13-year-old grandson, he said, how can he say that, Sadie? 2/5 is smaller than a half. It can't be. Can't be. He has no idea how to add fractions. I asked him, how many inches in a foot? He doesn't know. How many ounces in a pound? He doesn't know. How many feet in a yard? He doesn't know. I didn't ask how many feet in a mile. That would have been off the wall. He doesn't know basic survival skills. How's he going to function in the world? I worked with him the 3 times. We got a 6th grade workbook in math, and it was like pulling teeth. It was terrible. I called the mother and I said to her, look, it's just not going. I have to be honest with you. It's not going. She says, yes, he also feels very frustrated. I said, look, I'm probably not the one to deal with your son. But let me tell you this. And then I told her what some of what he doesn't know. And I said, you know, he's eventually going to have to go to work. By the way, I asked one kid, what are you going to do later in life? I'm going to sit and learn. Who will support you? My father. So I said to him, well, what if your father wants to sit and learn and you should support him? He looks at me. So I said to her, forget about me. This young man does not have the skills to function in the world. You have to get somebody to work with him. Yes, I know. I don't know what happened. Now, by the way, and one more story. A friend of mine told me one Sunday morning, very discouraged, that he has a friend who teaches in a Masifta boys' high school here in Flatbush. I will not name any names. And this friend used to teach social studies. And he decided he's quitting. He can't take it. First of all, the attitude of the boys is terrible. But what finally, the straw that finally broke the camel's back was when he was told that one of the 8th grade Rebbeim was telling the boys not to go to secular subjects in high school. And when a boy asked him, but how will I earn a living? He was given the following answer. You will marry a wealthy girl. So now we know where the problem is. The Beis Yaakovs are not producing enough wealthy girls. If they did, that would be it. Everything would be fine. So there's the problem. Now, how did I get in? By the way, it's not all bleak. There are some yeshivas. There are some masiftas. I visited one last week in which most of the boys take the secular subject seriously, in which there's order, there's no chaos in the classroom, there's no chaos in the halls. But in others, it is absolutely a disaster. Pardon? I don't want to name any names. Okay? I don't want to name any names. Okay? I went to this place, a friend of mine is the principal, and he asked me not to say anything, name the yeshiva, so I don't. Okay? How did I get involved in this issue publicly? In May of 2004, the Jewish Observer devoted an issue with the title General Studies in the Yeshiva, a Neglected Frontier. My oldest son called me, he says, Abba, you've got to get that issue. You're going to read it and you're going to want to write a response. I went and I got it, and I sat down and put together a response of approximately 6,000 words. A very long article. I have a lot to say. I sent it off to the editor of the Jewish Observer, and I called him the next day or 2 days later, and I said, I sent you an article. He says, I know, he says. He says, I read it. He says, I was thinking what we need is a forum on this topic, and your article is precisely that forum. It really is. It's just what we need. I said, wonderful. He says, but I have to circulate the article to the editorial board, and then we'll know, I'll be able to decide, make a decision about publication. I said, fine. Goes by 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. I get no response. I call up the editor, and I ask them, what's going on? So he says to me, you know, that statement of the Vilna Gaon that you have at the beginning of the article doesn't apply. What is the statement? When I was in the illustrious city of Vilna, in the presence of the Rav, the light, the great Gaon, my master and teacher, the light of the eyes of the exile, the renowned pious one, may Hashem protect and save him. Rav Eliyahu, that's the Vilna Gaon. In the month of Tevis 5538, that's January 1778, I heard from his holy mouth, that according to what a person is lacking in knowledge of the other wisdoms, that secular knowledge, correspondingly he will be lacking 100 portions in the wisdom of the Torah, because the Torah and the other wisdoms are inextricably linked together. That's from the introduction to the Hebrew translation of Euclid's Geometry by Rabbi Baruch Schick. The Gaon encouraged him to translate mathematics and science books into Hebrew, and he did. I said to myself, I was thinking, but I didn't say it to this editor of the Jewish Observer, I was thinking, you know, if I took the approach that this doesn't apply today, I'd be a Reformed Jew. Right? I could take anything in Judaism. This doesn't apply today. He said to me he would publish some excerpts. I told him he should not publish anything that I sent him unless he sends it to me up front, because I've had experience. I know what they can do to you by pulling out excerpts. Bottom line, never published anything. I cut the article down to 2,200 words, which is the size of a front page article, or was the size of a front page article in the Jewish press. I sent it to Jason Moes, who's the editor of the Jewish press, and he published it. I got more feedback from that article than any other article I had published up to this time. Parents are really disturbed by what their children are not learning. They are really disturbed. But nobody is doing anything. Now, let's understand where we are and how we got there. So allow me to give you a short lesson in American Jewish history. The first yeshiva upon which all of the yeshivas and day schools are modeled today was the Rabbi Jacob Joseph School that was started in 1902. True, Yeshiva Eitz Chaim was started in 1897 or something like that, or 1887, but it was not an elementary school. It was an intermediate school. The first school that was started for small was RJJ. And what did RJJ do? They took and gave Limudei Chol, and then they append landed onto with the public school curriculum, essentially the entire public school curriculum, in the afternoon from 4 to 7, from Sunday through Thursday. Yeah, Lamudei Kodesh was in the morning, but Lamudei Chol was from 4, I'm sorry, I meant to say in the morning was Lamudei Kodesh, and the afternoon from 4 to 7 was Lamudei Chol. That's 15 hours a week, ladies and gentlemen. Our kids don't get 15 hours a week. Now, why did they do that? And here we have to understand something about the mentality of the immigrants who began to come here in masses in 1881 and on. They were concerned that their children should be Americans. And they sent their children en masse to public school. Kids from the most religious family. First of all, there were no yeshivas in the beginning. There were Talmud Torahs. By the way, the Talmud Torahs also met 3 hours a day and on Sundays also. They had concentrated time, but they sent their kids to public schools. Public school meant to be an American. And this attitude that you were un-American if you didn't send your children to public school lasted into the 20s, 30s, and 40s. Rabbi Avigdor Miller told me that when he tried to start a day school in Chelsea, Massachusetts, the president of his shul told him, if you want a yeshiva, you go to New York. And if you keep this up, you're going to be fired. We'll fire you. And he told me that the day that they bought the building, he hid in the home of a friend with the deed because he was afraid they were going to come and make him give it back. You don't understand what was going on. That was the attitude. Public school is the way. So what did they do? They took the public school curriculum, added it to the end of the day. So here, now you had both. You had both. Okay. And by the way, RJJ was a huge success. Started in 1902. In 1913, there were 600 boys enrolled in that institution. 600 boys. But we're beyond this today, ladies and gentlemen. No parent in his or her right mind would think of sending their kids to public school today, right? It's unheard of, unless there's some extraordinary situation, who knows what. It's just not done. Yet we continue to do exactly what RJJ did. We have taken some of the secular subjects, the public school curriculum, and added on to the day. Who says that's the right thing to do? It really, I think, is time to rethink our approach and update what we are doing. One of the first things that we have to do, but when you talk to the people involved in yeshivas, they don't listen. You have to give an entrance exam in Lamudei Chol to make sure that the student who comes in is capable of functioning at a high school level. If a boy can't do fractions and percents, how can he take Math A? How can he take Math A? If he reads something, as a boy did to me, and said it was a problem in a Regents, somebody is a member of a bowling league. What's a league? League, I said to him. Oh. Or if when I asked the boy, what's the answer to a problem, he says to me, day. I said, what? I said, spell it. He goes, F-I-F-T-Y. I said, where's the D? Oh, he says, 50, I have to speak English here? I said, yeah, you have to speak English here. So if you take youngsters who are not equipped, and it's not a joke, it's a sadness, who are not equipped to handle a high school curriculum and throw them into a high school curriculum, what's going to happen? He can't follow. He can't do anything. He's going to become frustrated. He's going to disrupt the class. And it's going to become hefka. It's going to become off the wall. So if there are parents who have children, and by the way, again, a large part of the problem is in the elementary school, where already the seeds are being sown for this negativism and for this lack of skills, of fundamental skills. Parents must make sure, they must monitor. Don't rely on the report card. You have to see what your child knows and see where they are. Tell you something that's not a big secret. If a kid is well behaved, doesn't disturb the class, they'll promote him every year. He may know nothing. They'll just promote him because he doesn't bother anybody. Why not? Why not? They'll promote him. Yeshivas should give entrance exams. They should give exams. I spoke to a principal, a Manayal Yeshiva, about this. I said to him, your kids, because I have tutored boys in Yeshiva, they're not equipped to take the ninth grade math. That I can testify to. That I know something about. You have to give an exam. And those who don't know, you have to give them a year, a bridge year of remedial work. Yeah. Doesn't happen. What we have to do is eliminate this separation, this artificial separation between Limudei Kodesh and Limudei Chol. After all, the Torah encompasses everything, right? It's all one unit. It's not that at 3 o'clock, the world changes and now it has nothing to do with Torah. Torah should pervade everything. Of course, we have to always keep in mind that Limudei Kodesh is the most important thing. There's no question. There's absolutely no question about that. But that does not mean that the other stuff is useless. By the way, a person who builds himself or herself up by negating others, we realize that's somebody with serious psychological problems, right? Yet we see people in the yeshiva world, quote unquote, building themselves up by knocking the secular world. Rabbi Schwab, in an essay called The Jews in Golas, How High a Profile, wrote the following. This is Rabbi Shimon Schwab, who was the Rav first in Baltimore and then in Washington Heights. If all the nations of the world, and it is a tendency today to think this way, are depraved, foolish, and wicked, it is no distinction to be better than those who are depraved, foolish, and wicked. That is no basis for praise to the Rabbanu Shalom. By the same token, gratitude for being given the Torah cannot be meaningful if all non-Torah science is nonsense, if all secular knowledge is without value. What glory is ascribed to Torah knowledge if its distinction is simply that it is superior to nonsense? To the contrary, Chazal have told us that there is indeed chokhmah, wisdom, amongst the nations. As a matter of fact, upon seeing a wise non-Jew, one pronounces a blessing, praising God for having given of his knowledge to a creature of flesh and blood. But all their knowledge, all their sciences, and all their wisdom shrinks into absolute nothingness before the majesty of one kutzel shelt yud, small stroke of the sacred Torah. We have to change the attitude of students towards the secular subjects. Years ago, somebody told me the following story. There were two boys who were successful in learning in the mirror who were disturbing things in the high school. It's an old story, so I mentioned yeshiva. No matter what they did, they could not get them to behave properly in the afternoon. So finally, they brought them to the old Rav Kalmanovich. Rav Kalmanovich said the following. Now, please, listen carefully. He told them that when the Gedolim decided that it was necessary to bring secular subjects into the yeshiva, they gave off time from Torah learning for that. To waste that time is bittul Torah. You hear? That should be a big sign in all the yeshivas. To waste time in secular subjects is bittul Torah. Now, there's also another problem that is becoming more and more rampant. It is a lack of Derech Eretz. We live in a world... Derech Eretz. You hear stories about what some of these boys do. It's absolutely mind-boggling. Let me read another Yated Reader's Write letter from 11-2-07. Where is there more respect? Dear editor, I have taught in both yeshivas and in a public school. The public school I taught in was made up exclusively of students who have been kicked out of their regular high schools. Some of them had even been through the legal system and had their parole officers come to school to check up on them. So you get an idea of the chevra here. Guess where I had the most respect from the students? From the public school students. There, the students knew that they had to do well because they had learned that doing well in school was the key to success in life. At the yeshiva, I was met with the same attitude that Anonymous espoused. That's another letter he's referring to. Why worry about English classes if you're doing well in Hebrew? Why worry about English classes if you're doing well in Hebrew? Regardless of the career path one takes in life, you still need to learn basic reading, writing, math skills. Also, misbehavior is an absolute chil Hashem. At the yeshiva, I was the only from English teacher. The other teachers were either assimilated Jews or not Jewish at all. During our co-planning time, I was always having to field questions about why Orthodox Jews act the way they do. It was a very uncomfortable situation all around. Even if a child does not see the immediate value of the subject being taught, the parents are still paying for a full day of school, not a half a day. Sincerely, a disgruntled from English teacher. That's what you're up against. Now, the curriculum needs to be revamped, in my not-so-humble opinion. And let me give you an example, a simple example. One of my grandsons is in the fourth grade. In October, I was talking with him. What were you studying? Oh, we're learning about Columbus. Oh, Columbus, yeah. Discovered the New World. So I said to him, did the teacher mention the Inquisition? He says to me, no. That the Jews lived in Spain? No. About Muranos? No. About the fact that Columbus used Rabbi Abraham Zacuto's astronomical tables? Shakes his head, no. That there were Jews who sailed with him? His interpreter was Louis de Torres. Alonso de la Cala, the ship physician, was Mastro Bernal, and the surgeon was Marco. That when Columbus discovered America, it was October 12, 1492. That was Hoshana Rava. How about that? What was his answer? No, the teacher didn't. He said, it's not in the book. True, it's not in the book. I know it's not in the book. And, in truth, I can't expect this young woman who's teaching it to know any of this stuff. Really, I can't. But we need to produce supplements where this material is available. And I am willing to assist any yeshiva to produce such supplements. American Jewish history is a huge resource of amazing tales about Jews. Jews who sacrificed to maintain Yiddishkeit. I'm not interested personally in the labor movement or in this or that. That's not my interest. If you read what I write, I focus on almost exclusively on religious Jews. That's what I'm interested in. We have to let our children know that. This has to be taught alongside with what's in the book. Let's make it part of the yeshiva.
What are the Rosh Yeshiva?
What? In response to my article in the Jewish press, not one person involved in chinuch wrote in a letter. Not one. Parents, yes, but not one. By the way, it's more than that. Our young people don't know about the Holocaust. They don't know in general. They really don't know. The Holocaust is a tough subject to teach. I agree. Okay, who can understand that? Certainly I can't. Okay, I can't understand it. But nonetheless, it made an unbelievable... It's a gigantic event in Jewish history. Yeah.
What age should be exposed to the Holocaust?
I think that even young children can understand that bad things happened during World War II. What age? I think certainly 11, 12-year-old can understand that. Now, from personal experience, my oldest grandson became interested in the Holocaust. He's 14 years old. And he began to read. Now, Rafol is a reader. He's an avid reader. Okay, and everything sticks in that mind. And eventually, my son had to shut him off because he was going towards things which he could not, we felt, digest at this age. I can't digest some of that stuff. I'll be honest with you. You see videos of stuff that I can't. But nonetheless, they should know that there was a Holocaust. They should have some idea what happened. They should have some idea about it. Who's teaching it? I don't know. By the way, here's a way to send a clear message about the importance of putting one's mind to the afternoon secular subjects. A fellow wrote me an email. My son is in ninth grade in a black hat masifta, and during the secular studies portion of the day, in addition to algebra, science, and English, all taught by Orthodox teachers, he is learning Jewish history with the mashgiach of the masifta as a teacher. One more time. He is learning Jewish history with the mashgiach of the masifta as the teacher, and Shmuel Aleph as the text. According to my son, general history is taught beginning in the 10th grade. This masifta takes secular subjects very seriously. If a bocha doesn't behave properly during quote-unquote English, he is suspended, and the suspension is all-inclusive. He is suspended from English studies and Limudei Kodesh, i.e. cannot attend shir / seder. And when I speak of doesn't behave properly, I'm not referring to outrageous chutzpahdik behavior, but even such behavior such as talking during class, etc. But they don't do it. They don't do it. They ignore it. And it becomes hefka. And by the way, once you lose control, it is very, very hard to gain it back. Ask anyone who has ever taught. You always come in and read the riot act in the beginning, so to speak, and then you can become kind and gentle. But in the beginning, you've got to make it clear who runs the show. Otherwise, the students will push you as far as they can. And it seems that our yeshiva boys are very, very skillful at that. What about math? What do I need it for? What do I need it for? What do I need it for? Well, why isn't the Vilna Gaon Sefer Ayin Meshulash the 12th grade of mathematics? There's Math A and Math B and Math C. Now they're changing it again to Algebra 1 and Geometry and Algebra 2. They keep changing it around. But anyway, the 12th grade, by the way, the 12th grade, if you look at the yeshiva curriculum, has essentially been eviscerated. It ain't there anymore. They give them English and one other subject, and the other three periods they're learning in base medrash. Why? But it's even worse than that. A mother called me today that her son is in yeshiva, where in the eighth grade, they're giving them accelerated math so that they can take the ninth grade regent in the eighth grade, so that will free them even more in high school. Her son can't handle it. Most of the boys can't handle it. Why are they doing it? When my kids were in Torah Vadas, they were also trying to do that. I bombed the principal. I said, this I know what I'm talking about. This I know, this is my area. This is disaster. And he backed off. What are you doing? Teach the fundamental basic skills. So again, why can't the 12th grade... By the way, there exist three publications of the Vilna Gaon Sefer with very nice perushim in Hebrew that you could use in a high school class, and you know something? The boys would also learn some Hebrew. Oh, that's... No. Whatever. He's off the wall. He's really crazy, this Levine. Levine is off the wall. Science! If you've ever spent any time listening to Rav Avigdor Miller talk about the glories of science and how it shows us an insight into the marvels of the Ribbono Shel Olam, why isn't that taught along with the science that we teach? Why isn't that there? It's not in the book, so we have to write a book. Write a supplement. Produce it. Rav Yonasan Eibershitz wrote in Yaris Dvash the following. Listen. For all the sciences are condiments and are necessary for our Torah, such as the science of mathematics, which is the science of measurements and includes the science of numbers, geometry, and algebra, and is very essential for the measurements required in connection with Egla Rufa and the cities of the Levites and the cities of refuge, as well as the Sabbath boundaries of our cities. The science of weights, that is mechanics, is necessary for the judiciary, to scrutinize in detail whether scales are used honestly or fraudulently. The science of vision, that's optics, is necessary for the Sanhedrin to clarify the deceits perpetrated by idolatrous priests. Furthermore, the need for this science is great in connection with examining witnesses who claim they stood at a distance and saw the scene to determine whether they are, whether the arc of vision extends so far straight or bent. The science of astronomy is a science of the Jews. The secret of leap years, to know the paths of the constellations and to sanctify the new moon. The science of nature, which includes the science of medicine in general, is very important for distinguishing the blood of the Nidda, whether it is pure or impure, and how much more is it necessary one strikes his fellow man in order to ascertain whether the blow was mortal, and if he died, whether he died because of it, and for what disease one may desecrate the Sabbath. Regarding botany, how great is the power of the sages in connection with kalium, mixed crops. Here too, we may mention zoology, to know which animals may be hybridized, and chemistry, which is important in connection with the metals used in the tabernacle, and on and on and on. You know yeshiva teaching science like that? I don't. Science. Feh. Goyish. Feh. Something else that we're missing. Communication skills. Reading, writing, and speaking. Have you ever noticed that at most, or not most, but at many simcha halls, there's a sign over a certain door that says M-E-N-S? Look around. I can name those halls if you'd like, some of them. There's one in Williamsburg. There's one over here in, not far in Flatbush. I spoke to a guy. Actually, my brother-in-law, he took it more to heart than I did. Spoke to a guy. So the guy said, one men, two men's. Where's the apostrophe? Apostrophe. Have you ever looked at the flyers that the shuls and the yeshivas produce? I want to teach English grammar by having the boys collect these flyers, and then we'll analyze them for incorrect grammar and sentence structure. It's a beautiful idea, in my opinion. There's a lot of material there. There's something that I suffered under as a youngster called precy writing. What is precy writing? Precy writing is you take a fairly long article and you're required to boil that article down to one paragraph. Say 200 words, 300 words, whatever it may be. It is an excruciatingly painful exercise in the beginning. But you learn through that exercise to identify the key features of the article, to boil things down and put them in a clear, bam, format. Why not do that with a blot Gemara or a sugi in the Gemara? Why not have the boys be required to write a one-paragraph summary of the sugi that they just learned? They look at me like I'm crazy. You can't do that. Why not? What? Speaking. Public speaking. I have been joking for years that I am going to publish a book called Unheard Bar Mitzvah Drushes. You've been there. Go to a bar mitzvah. The book will be a big, thick, leather-bound book. It'll have gold along the sides. And you'll put it on your dining room table, and anybody who comes in, you'll say, my son's unheard bar mitzvah drush is in there. It's right in there. Bar mitzvah time is a time to teach a young boy to deliver a talk in front of a group that makes sense, that the people can understand. It is not to be a mumble-a-thon. And it is a wasted opportunity when it becomes that. If it were up to me, I would have, both in the boys' and the girls' schools, each student present something once, 5 minutes a day, and go around the class, whether it be a little Dvar Torah, whatever it may be. By the way, there was a time when the skill of being able to present things to the world was a very valued skill. Rabbi Shera taught a course in public speaking in Torah Vadas for years to the Smicha class. And the assignment was take something from the New York Times and relate it to the Sedra of the Week. That was the assignment. That was the assignment. We have a desperate need for good Orthodox male teachers. And it's becoming more and more desperate. Because as more and more people drop out of the secular route and don't obtain a decent secular education, where are you going to get teachers from? Where are they going to come from? Now, one principal told me that he doesn't really care if his teachers have a college degree or not. That's not the point. They have to be able to teach the material. By the way, Rav Yisrael Belsky taught high school mathematics in Torah Vadas. He never went to college. He won a Westinghouse scholarship, but he never took advantage of it. There are gifted people who could do it. To be a teacher, by the way, requires a certain skill. You can train somebody a bit, but they need a certain talent for it. I would like to identify Kollel men. By the way, this friend of mine said that they pay between $30,000 and $35,000 a year for 3 hours a day for 4 days a week. Now, that isn't the greatest money in the world, but somebody could learn morning Seder in Kollel, could teach in the afternoon, and even go back for night Seder. And you know something? It might allow his wife to be home to raise the children. Because indeed, who is raising our children?
That's why he's going to write the book and not going out of the book.
Yeah, but he could be trained. I could set up workshops in which I would train them to teach science and mathematics.
And now.
Let me just finish, and then we'll have questions. Okay, I'm going to finish soon. There are many other things that are not being taught that should be taught. There are life survival skills. What are they? Well, some of them are. These are skills that many people learn as they go through life by trial and error. But nonetheless, we could teach them in high school. Map reading. How many people know can't read a map? It's ridiculous if you can't read a map. Simple electrical and plumbing repair. Every man or woman should know how to change a light switch. You don't have to be Einstein to do it. You don't. Carpentry. Simple cooking and sewing. Cooking for boys, you say? You're off the wall. First of all, I have a riot from the Torah. Didn't Yaakov Avinu know how to cook? Doesn't say he took something his mother made. Right? And also, who knows what life will bring? We had an instance in which a young woman unfortunately passed away in our block and left two young daughters. And the husband knew nothing. And it was a disaster. It was a disaster. Every youngster, boy and girl, should know how to cook. By the way, if I were to teach fractions in elementary school, I would take the kids into the kitchen and say, we're going to make cookies. And now we're going to make 1 3/4 times the recipe. Give me the measurements. If you get it right, you get to eat the cookies. If not, you don't get to eat the cookies. That's it. What about sewing, to sew on a button, basic accounting, nutrition, child care, child development, child discipline, comparative shopping, investing in law. These are skills, these are life survival skills. Where are they? Why aren't they there? Parents have to demand quality secular education. That is the only way that the system is going to be changed. That's the only way. They have to insist and demand that there be no Bittul Torah in the afternoon. Just like Rav Kalmanovich said. Let me close by reading another letter from the Ated. Taking responsibility for our children. This appeared 11/2/07. Dear editor, true, raising teenagers is a difficult, no, virtually impossible job. But what does that have to do with teaching our children basic oratory and language skills? Because teenagers often eschew our requests, suggestions, and instructions. Does that mean that we should fold ourselves up like a beach chair on Labor Day and throw our hands up in the air? The answer is no. The answer is that we must, if we want our children to be successful, bright, and intelligent people, tune into what our children need to learn and acquire. When we finally open our eyes, we will see that there is nothing more important when imparting basic life and social skills than teaching our children how to speak, write, interact with people, take responsibility for their actions, and respect others. For some odd and inexplicable reason, we completely ignore these most important lessons when it comes to raising our children. These skills are not part of any school curriculum that I know of, which leaves it up to parents to teach them to their children. Those people I know who are skilled in writing, speaking, interacting socially, etc., were taught these skills by their parents, or in some rare cases, they were born with supreme intellect and given the ability to comprehend and hone these skills on their own. Several years ago, I learned with a teenage boy who I noticed did not speak clearly, could not write a full sentence in English without an error, and was completely unequipped with the basic ability to have an intelligent conversation with a person he never met before. When I spoke to his parents and mentioned my concerns, they told me that they had indeed noticed the same problems and really wanted to improve their son's abilities in these areas. They wanted to know what I can do to help. They suggested that after our learning sessions, I should teach their son some writing and social skills. I was flabbergasted. First, I was dumbfounded by how they said that they noticed the same thing as if they were some outside observers who happened to have picked up on something. Alternately, perhaps they were very attuned to their child's needs, but had never before placed importance on these skills. I was also bewildered by how these parents were suddenly displaying such concern regarding these issues when these skills that they should have been teaching starting a decade earlier. Try teaching writing and social skills to a 16-year-old who is virtually ignorant in these areas. While it can be done, it is an arduous task, to say the least. A task that, in my mind, would not be necessary if the parent had only tuned in a bit earlier. I won't get into the discussion about how it is incongruous to demand success from our children during Limudei Kodesh classes and ignore what goes on during Limudei Chol. That has been discussed ad nauseum and is a bizarre approach that should boggle the mind of any straight-thinking person. Those who continue to demand success in one area and not in the other are simply doing a disservice to their child, the school, and ultimately themselves. And in my opinion, those yeshivas that continue to run unorganized English departments and allow hefkeris during the afternoons are also responsible for the skewed message they are sending to their own students and the chil shem shamayim that results. Let us start by taking responsibility for the education of our children so that they grow up to become bright and intelligent b'nei Torah who are mekadesh shem shamayim in whatever they end up doing and have the skills to be successful as they make their way through life. Thank you.